Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can watch us this morning on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago. I wanted to start you with this morning, Abdallah, because over the course of the weekend, I've been thinking a lot about football. I can't wait for it. I can't wait to start previewing the football season. I can't wait to start planning the football season and get into the conversations about football. And this week, Pro Football Focus and ESPN.com released rankings of the rosters in the National Football League, 1 through 32, the best rosters in the National Football League. And they ranked the Chicago Bears 21st. Now, at first glance, I thought to myself, for a defense that is that good, it's a little low. It's a little low for me, 21st. Then I started to read through the column, and, you know, teams at the top, right? The obvious teams at the top, they rank the Ravens as the number one roster in all of the NFL, the Saints number two, the 49ers three, the Chiefs four. I think if we looked at all of the different projections for this upcoming NFL season, those are the top four teams, right? Like we would all agree that the Ravens, Saints, 49ers, Chiefs, those are the four best teams in the NFL. Five, you have the Bucks. Questionable, I think. A little questionable. Good defense. Tom Brady's there now, but really, the fifth best team, the fifth best roster in the NFL for the Bucks.
That's suspect to me. Suspect. Then Tom Brady brings it up. Gronkowski brings it up a little bit, but we don't know. He hasn't played in a year.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what he's going to look like.
Right.
He's small now.
And we also don't know Tom Brady in a new system.
Yeah.
What is that really going to look like? Because like I feel like the last couple of years, Tom Brady, a part of why he's been so successful late is because of familiar with his system, with Bill Belichick, the way they play football. Okay. Six, the Cowboys. Seven, the Bills. The Titans, eight. The Eagles, nine. Steelers, 10. So that's the top 10 from Pro Football Focus, ranking the rosters. All right, so we get to the Bears at 21st. It mentions the X factor for 2020 of each team. For the Chicago Bears, it says if Nick Foles can win the starting job at quarterback as he's projected here. So they have Nick Foles as the projected starter for the Chicago Bears. He can provide a significant upgrade over what Chicago has received from Mitchell Trubisky over the past several seasons. Foles had a flash of brilliance, namely back-to-back elite performances to close out the 2017 postseason. He also has had his fair share of lows outside of Philadelphia. All in all, it comes to a 74.8 passing grade over the past three seasons and over 600 dropbacks, 10 points higher than Trubisky's mark of 64.6. So I read that, and I saw 21 for the Chicago Bears, and I said, okay, they are using analytics to suggest that the upgrade at quarterback is an upgrade by over 10 points at the quarterback position, which, as Bears fans, we know, defensively has been A-okay.
Yeah.
One of the best defenses we've seen. And in 2018, I know by Pro Football Focus rankings and Football Outsider rankings and all the different analytical rankings, Bears had one of the best defenses in, like, the past 10 years in 2018, that 12-4 team. Okay, so if we upgrade the quarterback position by almost 10 points, according to Pro Football Focus, and Nick Foles being the starter, that to me would suggest the offense is much upgraded, right? So explain this to me. If Pro Football Focus is telling me this, and then I go, Abdallah, I give you the top 10, but what are the teams in the division? Where are they ranked? Here's where they're ranked. The Green Bay Packers, 12th. The Minnesota Vikings, 17th. And the Detroit Lions, 19th.
Wow.
So explain this to me. If I think the Bears' defense is good, and we are being told by Pro Football Focus that the offense is being upgraded at the quarterback position specifically by more than 10 points according to Pro Football Focus, you're telling me they have the fourth best roster in the NFC North?
Well, Chris, Pro Football Focus, if you don't know, they're a bunch of haters. They're a bunch of haters.
Haters gone wild.
And it means nothing to me because they're haters. And listen, but okay, so look at the Bears and the way that Pro Football Focus does this. They have four grading categories: elite, good / high quality, average, and below average, right? Now, if you look at the Bears specifically, it's all color-coded, and, you know, the elite players are in dark blue, the above-average are in light blue, and the average are in gray, and if you're not in gray, then you're bad, right? So Nick Foles has a 76.6. He should be an above-average player, but his rating doesn't count because he wasn't on the team last year.
Right.
Akeem Hicks is an elite player, a 91.7, but his rating doesn't count because he didn't play enough games for his rating to count. So that is not a factor. They have Jimmy Graham listed as the tight end here. It's going to be Cole Kmet. Jimmy Graham's not going to be your starting tight end for the Chicago Bears. You look at Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson is an above average player. Eddie Jackson is probably I wouldn't say he's an elite player, but I'd say he's an above average player. He probably had an average season last year, but you and I know watching Eddie Jackson, everybody else knows watching Eddie Jackson, that he had an above average, he is an above average player. He may have had a down season, but he had an above average player. Khalil Mack is an elite player. He didn't have a great year, but you and I both know he's an elite player. So if you look at these scores, if you factor in the injuries and you put Akeem Hicks' score in there, you put Nick Foles' score in there, and you actually count it, they're a top 20 team. They wouldn't be 21st. They'd probably be higher than the Lions. They might not be higher than the Packers. They might not be higher than the Vikings. But if you factor these in, they're going to move up. They're going to move up into that top 20. They're probably going to move past, what were the Lions, 18th, you said?
19th.
They'll probably move up to 17 or 18, maybe even leapfrog the Vikings because their defense is better, and leapfrog the Vikings and become the second team. I think that this is, it's an imperfect system because it doesn't factor in certain things that you and I know by watching football. They're strictly looking at numbers. And I bet you if I went to whoever was in charge of grading the Bears and I said, look, you gave Akeem Hicks a 91.7, but you didn't count him because he didn't play enough games. But if you put that in, the Bears would be a top 20 team. They'd be like, yeah, you're right. The Bears are a top 20 team as far as roster goes, just based on their defense, because of everything that's not factored in. Like Jalen Johnson here is an 83.8, but he's just coming in. So that's not factored in either because he's just coming into the team. So they have a lot of very good players, a lot of above average, a lot of very good players that aren't being accounted for because of injuries, because they're new, because they're rookies. Jimmy Graham's not going to be the starting tight end for the Bears. It's just not going to happen. It's going to be Cole Kmet. So you can't factor that in. I don't know what score they would have given Cole Kmet because we can't see the scores that aren't available in this article.
Right.
So if he's lower than a 58, but we have no tape to go off of. We just have his college tape to go off of. Why are you putting Jalen Johnson in, but you don't put in Cole Kmet? You know what I mean? So to me, they're a top 20 team. They might be a top 15 roster just based off their defense. And if you factor in Nick Foles, they're probably a top 15 team. So to these haters, these prognosticators, listen, they can put all the numbers in they want to.
Right.
If they're not going to factor in players that we know are above average players, then what good is this list?
Now, you are suggesting, just because I'm a thinking person, listening. I'm a thinking person. I'm thinking here. I've got my thinking cap on. I'm ready to go here.
We call those thinkers.
Yeah.
I don't know what a thinking person.
I'm a thinking person. You are to suggest that the Chicago Bears are the only team where they didn't factor in players of that caliber into the score to then suggest that their roster is 21st. That's what you're coming at me with. That's what you're giving me. There are, if you scroll through all of the rosters, there are players who are projected starters who are not factored in.
Okay, but are those players as good as Akeem Hicks? Akeem Hicks got a 91.7. That is an elite player.
We can comb through all the different teams. I'm just suggesting to you, it's the same assessment for every team in the National Football League. So, like, I, and listen, I get what you're saying. Eddie Jackson, hell of a year 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You're lying to yourself if you're a Bears fan, if you think that Eddie Jackson played in 2019 the way he played in 2018, because he didn't. Same with Khalil Mack, who I think is one of the top 5 to 10 best players in the National Football League. The Khalil Mack we got last year was not the same Khalil Mack we got 2 years ago. Now, you could also factor in, Akeem Hicks causes a lot of damage inside, which allows a player like Khalil Mack to do his work. And when you remove one, the other will struggle a little bit. Thus, you get the score you get from Khalil Mack. They both work together. I get that.
Let me ask you this. Is Danny Trevathan a below-average player?
I think he's right at that.
Below average?
No, I don't think he's below average.
Okay,
I think he's at that
him.
Average.
Level. They gave him below average.
But your problem with this is the specific scoring system from Pro Football Focus. That's your problem here.
That's what we're ranking them by.
I know, but you are going player by player saying, so you're suggesting that a player like Anthony Miller was not an average or below average receiver last year? I think that's dead on the money. What did he do last year?
Look, some of them are right. Some of them are wrong.
Okay, how about this? The scores for the offensive line, all of them are
all
either in
average.
The 60s or the high 50s. That's the offensive line we had. And they talk about it in the weakness category that Chicago finished the 2019 season ranked with the 25th best offensive line in the National Football League. Any Bears fan in this city will tell you, even the Trubisky lovers will tell you, the reason why the quarterback struggled last year was because of the offensive line.
Here's how I look at this article.
Listen,
okay?
If you really want to dive into the specific rankings of the specific players, like, okay, but I think you could also point out some guys should be rated a little bit higher. I think you could also point to some guys should be rated a little bit lower.
Look, I'm going to tell you this. If you want to be a thinking person, if you want to be
thinking
the thinker,
person,
if you want
right
to be
here.
The thing, you want to put your hand
yes,
on your knee.
Yes, that's me.
You want to be
but
the thinker,
about football. I'm
okay.
thinking about football.
Okay, I will
that's how I woke up today. I wanted to think football.
The way I look at this Pro Football Focus piece on ESPN.com is like arguing a thesis. Well, you and I didn't go. We went to college. We went to Columbia College. We didn't have to argue theses. Tyler went to Syracuse.
Watch out, broadcaster, come in. Here he comes, Syracuse.
Did you ever have to argue a thesis?
No.
Did they make you watch footage of Bob Costas like it was Clockwork
Every
Orange?
Day.
Yeah.
What time?
Your eyes were
Bob
just.
Costas.
How long was the Tirico class?
Yeah.
There's the Tirico room.
Yeah, ooh, I'm sure there Tirico is.
Room.
Wait, hold on. Just a room?
Yeah.
The man deserves a building.
Well, I mean,
is it just me or does the man deserve a building?
How many buildings you guys got there on campus
a lot?
In Syracuse?
For what? Because
I know it's like it's always cold
school.
And it's always winter.
The rooms
there, right?
are very big so they can get their heads through the doors.
No, I know. Best broadcasters in the history of the world right there.
Okay, so my point
is. Watch out, Syracuse guy coming through.
It's like this is like arguing a thesis. You have people that are going to tear it down and it is your job to build it back up.
Right.
And you're going to say, well, look. I can go through and pick out little pieces. And I'm like, okay, fine. I can also go through and pick out little pieces. And somewhere we will meet in the middle, and I'll probably end up with a B- or a C+.
Can I tell you what I think in the middle, what the conclusion to this little exercise is all about
the
in the NFC North?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, the thesis. Can I tell you about that next?
Sure.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
All right.
Yeah. We're talking football here, Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 312-332-3776. I also have a NBA player that I think Bulls fans will want to root for when the playoffs start back up in the NBA. I'll tell you about who that player is coming up in a couple minutes. But we're talking about Pro Football Focus, ESPN. They combined forces to release a ranking of NFL rosters, and we're looking at the rosters in the NFC North. And in the NFC North, this is how it ranks. 12th are the Packers are 12th, the Vikings are 17th, the Lions are 19th, the Chicago Bears 21st. I think if we dissect all of this different conversation about the rosters, all this different stuff, all the information, the analytics, the moves in the offseason, I think the one conclusion I continued to draw from all the preview stuff heading towards the season is that, okay, you might have a point. And I also may agree with that point, that the Bears are not the worst team in the division based on the rosters, based on what Pro Football Focus suggests, based on the grades in the last season and grades from previous seasons. I get that. But are people underestimating how good the Lions might be? And when I say how good, I'm not saying they're going to be 12-4. Listen to what I'm saying. I don't think that they're a team that's like a 5-win team. And I think that's what we saw with this division heading into last season. Remember the projections for last season? Football Outsiders had every team in the NFC North projected to be 500. 8-8. They projected every team because they thought, based on the analytics, that the margin of victory between the Vikings, Packers, Bears, and Lions, it was going to be so close that all the teams were going to be about the same. And I think we're going to kind of have that again this season. I don't think the Lions and the Bears are far off from the Vikings and the Packers. And I think, you know, Pro Football Focus shows the Packers as the 12th best roster, but then you go down 17, 19, 21st, you get the other three teams. To me, that's pretty close. And I think people are sleepy. We hear too much here in Chicago that the Lions are terrible. You know, Matthew Stafford, before he was hurt last year, was having a pretty dang good year. Yes. And I think people underestimate that.
I agree with you. I think that the Lions will be better than the 3-12 team that they were last season. I think they're closer to an 8-8 team, but so are the Bears. The Bears are also an 8-8 team.
Sure.
So I don't think the Lions are going to come out and win the division, but ultimately I think that they are, because of injuries, they were a 3-12 team last season, and they're 3-12-1, whatever, they had tied one game. But ultimately, you know what I mean. I think that they are closer to a 500 team. I think that, you know, for the Lions, the Bears have dominated them the last few years. Like Matt Nagy knows how to beat the Lions. So I feel like the Bears will still have their number, but ultimately there still will be a decent team. I think those games will be tougher. They're divisional games. They're always going to be tougher. I still think the ranking is Vikings, Packers, Bears, Lions as far as the division goes, but the Lions are getting better.
Let me ask you this. If we look at the offensive side of the ball, quarterback, who has the edge, the Bears or the Lions? You can pick your quarterback, your soup de jour. Who would you like, Trubisky or Foles? What would you like?
I'll take Foles over Trubisky.
And who is the better quarterback, Matthew Stafford or Nick Foles?
Well, probably Stafford.
Probably, yeah. Matthew Stafford, that's
probably
the answer.
Probably Stafford.
Okay,
well,
so Lions.
I mean, listen, neither of them can stay healthy.
Okay, so Stafford. That's the answer. I mean, it is. Come on. Don't be a hater on Matthew Stafford. He's pretty good.
I'll flip a coin.
Okay. You really think that Stafford and Foles is a flip of the coin?
I think that...
Get out of here.
I don't know what Stafford's going to be. Stafford's got a bad back. You know how painful a bad back is? Dude could get hit one more time and he could just be done.
Yeah, that goes for 85% of the NFL.
Does it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, how many quarterbacks have bad backs?
Okay. I'm not going to debate bad backs with you. You come up with a list of good backs and bad backs, and then we'll do it at 10:02.
I'll come up with a few good backs.
Okay.
All right.
Running back. Kerryon Johnson, DeAndre Swift.
Good back.
Both?
Huh?
Both good backs?
Well, Swift might
be
better.
Who would you rather have? David Montgomery and Tariq Cohen?
Oh, no.
Or Swift and Johnson?
Swift and Johnson.
Okay.
It's definitely a Swift Johnson.
Okay. Let's go to tight end. TJ Hockerson?
Or
Cole Kmet?
Hockerson.
Okay, tight ends. Wide receivers, Galladay, Marvin Jones, Amendola, or Ted Ginn Jr., Allen Robinson, and Miller.
Ooh, I'll take Allen Robinson over those. I'll take Allen Robinson.
Robinson is the best by far.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. I'll take Allen Robinson.
Who has the better wide receiver core? That's what I'm asking.
Ooh, I'll still take Allen. I'll take the Bears. I'm still taking the Bears on that one. Still taking the Bears.
It drops off the table with Miller and Ted Ginn.
It does.
Allen
Robinson is better than makes it up.
Kenny Galladay? Yeah, he's much better. Yes.
Yes.
Because I think Allen Robinson is probably a top five wide receiver in the NFL.
I will take the Bears wide receivers.
The depth is better with the Lions.
Doesn't matter. I'm taking Allen Robinson.
You understand that. The depth is better.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm still taking Allen Robinson.
Now, without getting into it so in-depthly, I mean, the Lions' offensive line is better than the Bears. No?
Yes, they played better. I mean, Stafford got it.
Go off the grades.
I'm going off the grades. Yeah, you're right.
Four players of the five in the 70s.
I agree with you. We don't need to fight. You don't need to fight me over here.
The Bears' defense is better. Don't even come at me with that.
I don't need to. Yeah, the Bears' defense is better.
Across the board.
Yeah.
I would like a CUDA, but.
So I'm taking the Bears.
Okay. I think people look at the Lions and they kind of just say, oh, they're terrible. If you actually go position by position, it's actually not that bad. It isn't. Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago. What was that?
Bad back.
Stafford with the bad back?
I got a bad back.
Can I bring this up to you? Did you see last night the news? If you're a Bulls fan, you're saying, what am I supposed to cheer for when we head to the NBA playoffs? What am I looking for? Can I add this? Maybe Bulls fans will look to the Clippers. Do you see last night that Joakim Noah signs with the Clippers for the remainder of the season?
I thought he was already signed for the whole season. I didn't know that he was on like
ESPN.com.
I didn't know that he was on what is it? What do they call it? Like a two-way contract or whatever it is. Like he wasn't officially signed for the whole season. I thought he was because when I was looking at rosters for heading into this, Joakim Noah was on the Clippers roster. So I always thought he was on the Clippers roster. And absolutely.
This is how it played out. The Clippers signed the former two-time All-Star to a 10-day contract on March 9th, only 2 days before the NBA season was suspended because of the coronavirus pandemic. So that's when he joined the Clippers, right before. It was like one of the last sports pieces of news before everything started to get canceled. So Joakim Noah will be with the Clippers. I think it's pretty fun to think about because he's like one of those guys. As a Bulls fan, if he got a championship, I would feel really good as a Bulls fan. You know, it's Joakim and it's Derek. If Derek were to win a championship somewhere else, I'd feel great for him. Just like Joakim Noah. If he were the only other name that I could think of that I would feel that much appreciation for the time that they spent with the Chicago Bulls would be Luol Deng. He's not playing anymore, though.
No, he doesn't play anymore.
Like Luol everyone Deng, else, like, you know, Jimmy Butler, if he wins, I liked him here, but like, listen. He went on to different things. Like to me, it's not going to be that impactful.
No, I don't care if Jimmy Butler gets a ring. I would love for the Clippers to win, and I think they have a really good chance to win too. But I would love the Clippers to win, and you know, also another Chicago, Patrick Beverley, a Chicago guy from the Clippers, another guy to root for. But I feel like the city has always rallied around Derek. Obviously, everybody knows how much the city loves Derek Rose, but also Joakim Noah, just because of what he, you know, playing here, but then also what he gives back to the city. Like, he still gives back a ton to the city. He's got a lot of, you know, financial endeavors. He's got a lot of social endeavors here in the city where he helps a lot of, you know, underprivileged youth and everything like that. So he does a lot for the city. So it'd be great for him. We'd probably throw a parade if Derrick Rose won a ring, but like, we should throw just as big of a parade, maybe a smaller parade, but at least down a couple of these streets.
For Noah, yeah. I think we should celebrate.
At least past the head shops in Wrigleyville. Yes. Where people have seen him walk around.
I mean, you're right. Because Joakim Noah, even though he left, he does a lot of great things for the city still.
Yeah.
And I think he has an appreciation for Bulls fans who supported him through those times. And, you know, some of the great times in recent Bulls history were all around Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
Series, plays, highlights. You know, on our podcast page on ESPN, on the ESPN Chicago app, we were doing these NBA backstory podcasts. One of the NBA backstory podcasts that we featured was the 2009 first round series between the Celtics and the Bulls. And famously features Joakim Noah, his steal and dunk over the Celtics.
Mm-hmm. It's Pierce. Salmons fights through a screen. Noah knocked it away. Galloping with Pierce. Pierce has just fouled out of the game.
He is now out of the game. Paul Pierce has got to let that go. How about the speed, though, of Joakim Noah, the concentration? what a play.
I mean, early Joakim Noah, the hair flying, going full court, slams it. You see a dejected Paul Pierce in the background. I mean, that team was so much fun to watch.
Absolutely.
And Joakim Noah, you know, the other moment that really sticks out in my head was the year that everyone got hurt. And it was Joakim Noah, who not only did he get MVP votes, I think he finished fourth or fifth in the MVP voting that season, because basically Tom Thibodeau ran everything through the offense from Joakim Noah at the high post. And then they go into that Nets series, and everyone's hurt. And Joakim Noah, they go seven games with the Nets when the Bulls should have been eliminated easily. And it was like Nate Robinson coming up with a game, and then Joakim Noah doing everything. Like, that stands out to me because he truly was a player when the playoffs and the shine was there.
He also,
and the moments were there, he played his best.
He also embodied that Thibodeau mindset. Like, he played through so many foot injuries.
Yeah.
He didn't care how many minutes he played. He always wanted to go back out there. He embodied, like, there's that cliche, like, you know, blue collar Chicago, like hard nosed, tough, like it doesn't matter, gonna play through whatever. He embodied that. And I feel like, yeah, Derek was the star, but I feel like the fan favorite. Everybody loves Derek, absolutely. But find me a person that doesn't love Joakim Noah.
Nobody. The hard work, the ability to hype up the crowd and to come up with big plays. And I like that it was clear, you know, I always like players that clearly have a limitation. Like, obviously, he made the NBA. He doesn't have too many limitations. But when you get to that high level of athletics, he couldn't really shoot, but he figured out a way to shoot.
Yeah.
He didn't really have offensive game. He figured out a way to have an offensive game. He's just one of those NBA players that found a way to make an impact, even though on paper, what you see doesn't really quite add up to the production that he gives you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, if we were playing in the playground, you would pick Joakim Noah early because you'd be like, that dude's going to do everything he can to win this game. And it, like, doesn't matter. Like, who cares that he has a funky looking shot?
Doesn't matter.
Who cares that he can't really dribble, but he kind of can?
Yeah.
And he's sneaky with passes. Like, Joakim Noah is just so much fun. And so he's going to join the Clippers for the campus setting in the NBA, and we'll see if the Clippers can win. And that would be cool if Joakim Noah could get a title.
There's a lot of, we talk a lot about, like, oh, should we retire this jersey? Should we do this for, like, you should be retiring Rose and Noah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Come on.
A Noah retirement jersey?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Dude, we retire so many BS jerseys around here. Why not?
But, like, what?
Why not? Why not? Why not?
The why not is, like, why do we have to?
Why not? Why not?
I guess.
Why not?
If that's what we're doing.
Yeah, why not?
You're
going to need butts in seats. Well,
no,
maybe not. But when butts can be in seats, you're going to need butts in seats.
Let me ask you this. Coming up next, who is a better option for a 60-game Major League Baseball season, the Chicago Cubs or the Chicago White Sox? Which team has a better odds to make the playoffs? We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
On Twitter, at Chris Bleck, at Adam A. Abdallah. Anthony asked the question, and we'll get to Major League Baseball. Which team is better equipped for the 60-game schedule, the Cubs or the White Sox? We'll talk baseball with you in just a couple minutes right here on ESPN 1000. Anthony tweets us, what's a good longer shot team to bet on for the NBA championship? Anthony tweets that. So, Abdallah, let me ask you that question. If you're looking at the board, teams with longer odds to win the NBA championship, that's obviously removing teams like the Los Angeles Lakers, who have the best odds, the Milwaukee Bucks, second best, the Clippers, the Celtics, At what point do we get to a stage where we can say, okay, here are some longer odd NBA teams to win the championship and kind of look at that?
I mean, if you look at the odds, I think you start with, you can only remove the Lakers, Bucks, and Clippers, because the Lakers are plus 275, the Bucks are 3-1, and the Clippers are plus 325. Then the bottom drops out, because the Celtics are 16-1.
Yeah.
The Rockets are 18-1. The 76ers, who I'm going to mention, the 76ers, are 18-1. I think that the 76ers, a healthy Embiid, if he can stay healthy for the 3 months, however long it takes to win the championship, I think it's 3 months-ish, the 76ers can win.
What about his back, though?
Well, I mean, he's got a good back right now.
Whose back is a better back? Matthew Stafford's back or Joel Embiid's back?
I think Joel Embiid's back is better equipped because he doesn't have dudes trying to spear him in the back.
You sure?
Yeah.
Why? Because he's shooting three-point shots and he's not in the post?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and he doesn't have dudes trying to tackle him. Like, literally, the game isn't trying to tackle him.
Yeah, but he's flying all over the court sometimes.
Nah, he's not doing that much flying. I mean,
all
he's
right.
like 8 feet tall.
All right, go ahead. Backs.
No,
which back is back?
The 76ers.
Okay, 76ers.
18-1.
18-1?
Yeah.
To answer Anthony's question, I would say 76ers might be interesting. I agree with you, Abdallah, because you get Ben Simmons, a healthy Joel Embiid. Those are two players who can dominate series, especially when they're playing at their best. The other options I would look at is, do we have any interest in plus 4,000 in Luka and the Mavs? I mean, listen, this would solely be a pipe dream that Luka Doncic would come out and dominate. You know, he was having an incredible season.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the caliber of player that could take over full series after series, much like we saw Kawhi do last year? Is Luka Doncic that good this early? I don't think he's there yet. I think he's still a year or two away from getting his team to the conference finals type of thing.
Yeah.
But the Mavs at plus 4,000, I think, is interesting. And then what about the Toronto Raptors? Plus 3,000. The Raptors win the championship. They have the second best record in the Eastern Conference coming into this. Right, like throughout the regular season, the Raptors are still as good as they were last season without Kawhi Leonard. I think the Raptors are an interesting option too.
What about,
like, that's a long shot, but I mean,
I like
they're
it.
A good team.
Do you think any of the teams that aren't technically in the playoffs
no.
right now have a shot?
So, like, the only answer I think the only answer someone could give would be the Pelicans.
Yeah.
And the only answer you would give because of the Pelicans is because you assume that Zion Williamson's going to show up in better shape than he was at the end of the season in March. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we're looking at Zion Williamson being on that, like, LeBron James at 18 level where he is able to win playoff series by himself, kind of like the same conversation we were having with Luka.
Yeah, 60-1.
Yeah, I don't think that we're gonna see that from the Pelicans.
I think the safest long shot would be the 76ers. The Raptors I could see, but I like the 76ers. And like the Celtics are still 16-1 isn't awful. Like,
yeah,
those are great odds.
No, but you know,
the Celtics.
It's clearly the three heavy favorites, though. Lakers,
yeah.
Bucks, Clippers. Ramona Shelburne was on Dickerson and Hood yesterday, and Jonathan Hood asked her, who is she picking as a surprise team as we head to this campus setting for the NBA playoffs?
You're gonna laugh at me, okay? I'm crazy for saying this. I kind of like the Raptors. Raptors, man. Like, this is different. First of all, they're the defending champ, so they've all been there. They were playing really good. They had a few little they had injuries all year long, but I think they're all healthy now. Marc Gasol lost a bunch of weight. Like, I mean, I think they're in really good shape. Plus, I really think this is going to come down to coaching this year. Like, you don't have home court advantage. You don't have all the travel and the other things that you usually have to manage. You know, so many organizations have trouble managing sleep deficits on the road and guys traveling. And as we get deeper into the playoffs, you have to manage your family and friends coming and going. It's not going to happen like this year. It's just going to be right there. Talking about who can stay the most focused, but also who can be locked in, make in-game adjustments, like who doesn't need the crowd in order to win. So I think Nick Nurse is one of the best coaches in the league. I think I like Doc Rivers for that same reason. I think he's just a great coach, not only just mentally but strategically. So I kind of like the Clippers and the Raptors. Although I'm sticking officially, I am sticking with my pick of the Lakers because I picked them preseason. I picked them because I just thought they had the two best players in the league, you know, together, the best duo if we're doing that. But I just like how the Raptors play together. I think they know how to win together, and they've definitely been through it. I think that's going to matter when we get into this.
So that's Ramona Shelburne on ESPN Radio yesterday, Dickerson and Hood right here on ESPN 1000. I'm Chris Bleck with Adam Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. All right, so baseball, 60-game schedule, the White Sox and the Cubs. Which team is better equipped for the 60-game schedule? I think if we look at the Chicago Cubs, the veteran leadership is what I'm looking to, because I think with 60 games, knowing that you just have to get out of the blocks fast and you can take care of business, I think guys like Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, Wilson Contreras, Chris Bryant, they'll be ready to go. And even a DH and Kyle Schwarber, I like that setting for the Chicago Cubs, and especially Yu Darvish, John Lester, Kyle Hendricks. Knowing that you only are going to start 10 to 15 starts this entire baseball season, I think is huge for a guy like John Lester. The White Sox have all the talent in the world, and I like their team if we were heading into a normal 162-game schedule, because I like young teams throughout the entire season. I'm not sold that the young group of players for the White Sox are going to be able to just show up, turn it on, and be a playoff contender immediately. I like the Cubs in this situation.
I think the Cubs have the potential to put it together the fastest. You know, if you look at Vegas, the Cubs are a 20-1 shot to win it all. The White Sox are 35-1, but the win total is about the same. You know, the Cubs have a win total of 32. The White Sox have a win total of 31.5. So I don't know what the win totals are going to look like. Is a 40-win team going to win it all? Is a 50? Could a team win 50 games? Could a team only lose 10 games? Like, how is this? What is this going? Like, the best right now, if I look at it, if I sort by total. Nope, can't do that. Okay. Nope. Anyway, I don't know.
What were you trying to internet?
I was trying to see who has the highest win total right now.
Yeah.
And if I'm looking at it, the Dodgers are at 38.5.
They're probably, that would probably, them or the Yankees, you would think, right?
Yeah. So the Dodgers are at 38.5. So that's probably the highest right now. So can a team win 40 games now?
Okay, so if we go back to last season, we're looking at, let's see, June 1st of last season, the Dodgers were 40-19.
Okay.
So June 1st. So right about there. They were the best record in baseball. The Twins had 39 wins on June 1st of last summer. The Yankees had 38. So, yeah, you're probably looking at the best teams in baseball being around 40. Okay. To like 38 to 40 wins to go into the playoffs.
I agree with you. The veteran guys know their way around this the best. They say we can go all out. You know, like John Lester knows what he has to do to be ready to pitch. You know, he's probably been ramping up and getting ready for a while now. He's not just going to show up to spring training and be like, all right, I guess it's time to throw. Like, these guys know what they're doing. I'm not saying that the White Sox players don't know what they're doing, but there's also that element of, you know, no one thinks we're going to do anything this year. This is still kind of part of the rebuild year. Like, we were going to maybe, if this was a normal season and we made the playoffs and we, you know, won a round or two, that was probably going to be exceeding expectations for the White Sox this season. But also, they're just going to come out and just play. Like, they don't care. You know what I mean? Like, there's that element of, we're just going to go out, and if we're the hottest team, we're the hottest team, because we just don't know any better at this point. Like, they've got a few veteran guys, but for the most part, a lot of the guys just don't know any better. And if everything comes together, they could make a run.
I think I could apply the same logic for John Lester to Dallas Keuchel for the White Sox, because he's a vet who will know what to do, 10 to 15 starts, get it set up, get it ready to go. What will they get from Dylan Cease? What will they get from Giolito in a follow-up year to a great season last year? And then the biggest wild card for the White Sox is Michael Kopech.
Yeah.
If Michael Kopech can give you 12 legit starts where he is throwing heat and he looks like the stud pitcher that we are all expecting, then you could sell me on the White Sox winning their division.
Because the offense can be there for sure. I mean, you're already going to be in the middle of summer. Like, the heat, you're not going to have to start slow because it's cold out. Like, the ball is going to be flying. So they've got the offense. It's just a matter of whether or not the pitching can all finally come together for this short season.
Good question. Next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Story over the weekend from the Cleveland Browns that they don't know who's going to be their play caller in this upcoming season. Did you see that story?
It sounds like a problem.
Sounds very Cleveland Brown-esque, right?
I have a Brown story for you, too.
All right.
We'll get to that later.
In 10 minutes, we'll get to the Cleveland Browns. And also, I've got a story about the Baltimore Ravens as well. Can their offense take it to the next level? We'll talk
the
football.
Next level? What's the next level?
Hey, man, Greg Roman looking for the offense to take it to the next level.
I am scared of the Ravens' next level offense.
So we'll talk some football in 10 minutes right here on ESPN 1000. Every week at this time, we have a segment called Good Question. This is how it works. When a host at ESPN 1000 asks a question to a guest on the phone and the guest responds with good or great question, we score a point to that host. We have had this scoring system in place for over 3 years now. This is the third official season.
So it's not over 3 years. This is the third year.
Well, we had it in place, and then we implemented it. Two different things. We came up with the idea, then we took it to the airwaves. See how I did that?
I don't think that's how it works.
Well, that's how it's going to work now. So each summer and each year, we score all the hosts here at ESPN 1000. What does our leaderboard look like today?
So as of right now, one G. Thomas Waddle and one Jonathan Hood are tied for first place with 23. Cap is in second place at 21. And tied in third place are Carmen and Sylvie.
How about that?
And we don't do PGA rules. You're either first, second, or you're third. So like they're tied for first. There's a second place, and then they're tied for third. People were questioning the whether it was a PGA style, you know, leaderboard, and also people are questioning. There's a lot of interesting questions this week. Interesting questions do not count. No. The chat right now on Twitch, you can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Interesting questions do not count.
It's simple. The rules are simple.
Good question, great question.
Point. Anything outside of good or great?
Interesting
question? You do not get a point for that.
Tricky question.
No.
Interesting question.
Valid?
How about this? Excellent question.
No.
That's a good... Excellent is a...
Listen, we've discussed this many times. We've gone over it many times.
Excellent.
We will take on the excellent questions by a case-by-case basis. The board will
awesome
come together.
Awesome question?
No.
Radical question.
No. It's good or great. The bid is good or great.
I think excellent needs to count.
How are we this far along and we still don't have the rules set?
Well, I think we have a question in this one.
That we have to question?
Yes, a question that we have to question.
All right, well, let's hear it. Here's a good question.
You're going to take any questions?
You want me to let me finish talking? You ask me a question, I'm going to answer it. Don't interrupt me, okay? Just leave it plain and simple, all right?
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
Own or rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38. Dad, I got a question for
you. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
It's the question that drives us.
I watched Rush Hour the other night.
It's the question that brought you.
How'd that go?
How could you ask me a question like that? What is my opinion of this performance?
I'm going Burgundy?
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
Chris Tucker's funny, though. I love Chris Tucker.
Here's this week's edition of Good Question.
Going back to your playing days, Bill, given the scenario going on down in Orlando at Disney World, would you have gone to this? Would you have played in this bubble?
Well, you know, that's a good question.
To what degree have players been using facilities then, Jess? I mean, like, I know the Cubs had mentioned that some of the Arizona guys were able to use the Mesa facility. They've got strict protocols in place. What about the players here? Like, how much testing has happened now? Like, where are we with all of that?
No, that's a great question.
Sud, if you're a starting pitcher today, are you excited for a 60-game schedule? Because you can just let it loose and don't have to worry about innings limits or whatever? Or are you more nervous because you may your arm may not be in ready-to-go fashion and you can't work your way into shape as the season builds?
That's a great question.
What about what Dr. Fauci said today about a vaccine? The two-part question. When would you bet on a vaccine getting here? And when we do get a vaccine, Waddle has brought this up a lot. Will it be like the flu vaccine where people will still get it? Or will this eradicate COVID
it's
when the vaccine
technically Waddle's question that Sylvie asked.
Yeah, Waddle, you must have gone to medical school. It's a great question.
See?
It's a Waddle
John,
point.
Good morning. How are you, buddy?
Is it a Waddle point?
Yeah, we did this before.
Okay.
Great
yeah.
question, Cap.
Was that Cap?
Oh,
Cap's
right,
not
Chris.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Greenberg.
Take that.
Way to go, Greenberg.
Now that we move to kind of what's going to go on here in this 60-game season, I'm curious as to your thoughts about how you would approach it, because obviously baseball is a 162-game marathon that kind of you know normalizes out over that period of time. But in a 60-game sprint here, I mean, Hawk Harrelson taught me the old axiom. There's, you know, you're going to win 50, you're going to lose 50, and it's what you do with those other 50. Do we just need to kind of, you know, shorten it down and say you're going to win 20, you're going to lose 20, and it's what you do with those other 20 games that's going to determine whether or not you're a playoff team. I mean, how is this going to be approached if you're the, you know, a GM of a baseball team? What can you do differently in this short stretch here?
Jeff, great question.
Tampa Bay used their openers last year. Do you think more teams in baseball are going to use that kind of thing? Because you talked about pitchers, and I would think a lot of guys, even if they were regular starting pitchers, would probably go three, maybe four. And then because of the shortened schedules, like, listen, we're going to bring in some other guys now. But do you think on the other way, you bring in a reliever, a guy to go to an inning or two innings as an opener, you think those that kind of thing will be used more so this year?
Intriguing to me, Fred. Great question.
We kind of mentioned just, you know, free agency, and obviously I understand none of us have a, you know, a real handle on the impact, the economic impact that this season's going to have on baseball right now. But I'm curious as to your thoughts, you know, an absolute star free agent like Mookie Betts, who's going to be on the market. Have you thought about what kind of deal he might sign? Like, do you think he might be looking at like just a monster 1-year deal in hopes that the free agency market resets in 2021? Or, you know, do you think, or, you know, if you're advising him or his agent, you're thinking, you know what, if there's a $200 million deal out there, you should probably take it because of the uncertainty surrounding everything.
Jeff, great question.
Pretty good week for good question.
Good week.
Now, the question that Sylvie asked, that it was Waddle's question, the point goes to Waddle. We discussed this last year.
Mm-hmm.
That happened once or twice. The point goes to the person who came up with the question.
Yeah, so Waddle is now in the sole lead with 24, Jonathan Hood in second place with 23, and Cap with 22.
Now, as I fumble through the rule book here, now here's how Sylvie could have scored said point. If you don't credit where you get the question from, it would have been a Sylvie point. But Sylvie doing the right thing as a broadcaster,
of course,
giving the credit. So Sylvie, if we had someone with analytics for this, tracking assists, the assist would go to Sylvie there because he gave the credit, rightfully so, to Tom Waddle. Now, if he was
there's
just
no half points. We don't do half points.
Well, I'm just saying, if he wanted to just play dirty and just go for the points, as many points as he wants, you just take questions from everyone else. You just say them to the guests, and then you get the good questions.
Now, I will tell you this. We may be in the juice ball era because last year, the total, 2 years ago, the total was 33 for the winner. This year, the last year, the total was 30. We're already at 24.
What?
We're already at 24, and we're not. It's not July yet. We have July. We have August.
Wow.
Maybe September. Last year, we ended the season in September because we Chicago's college tailgate. So right now, with 2 months left to go, we're already at 24.
This is amazing. I mean, think about it. Everyone's looking at the seasons as they're going to have to add an asterisk. I mean,
this is the juice ball era.
COVID-19 pandemic is leading to all these good and great questions. We'll talk football with you in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.